Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 26th of March, recording at 8:42 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Well, another really interesting day here in stock markets. First, the Asian stock markets were very firm. That's right across the boards. And interestingly, bringing in the Pacific sector, so you cover the entire Asian Pacific sector, we've got India moving back above its 10,000 level on the Sensex index. Australia has just pushed steadily higher. Remember that briefly hit a new low earlier in the month, and Australian financials have seen a stunning rebound in the last 3 weeks. Chinese bank shares, they're in the index, of course, have broken up out of what could quite possibly be the first step above the base. In other words, an uptrend has already commenced. So this is interesting stuff. And the European markets, a quieter day here, but modest gains for the most part. And Wall Street, another solid performance here, closing near the higher side of today's ranges. And the gains are on the order of 2.3%, although the NASDAQ composite I see is up 3.8%. That's a good sign. The S&P 500 index is at 832.86. So that's continuing to push above that psychological resistance. Elsewhere, at the 800 level. Elsewhere, what have we got? The U.S. dollar was a little bit firmer against the euro and the Swissie, but not against the yen. Quite a bit stronger against the yen. The yen remains the weakest major currency. And we also see the Antipodean currencies doing quite well in here today. Precious metals, firmer, and gold only marginally so, and silver marginally so. Platinum and palladium are doing better. What else? The copper is strong here today, up over 6 cents at 186.40. And interestingly, natural gas has taken a bit of a hit here today. It had been quite firm recently, but it's back under $4. Crude oil is steady at nearly $54 for the WTI. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, this stock market situation is absolutely fascinating because what most people felt at the beginning of the market, most of the pundits at any rate felt at the beginning of the market, was the resumption of the bear market downtrends that only proved to be the case for Wall Street and the European markets. And not all of the European markets broke down. I think most of them certainly did, but for instance, Sweden was one notable exception. And also among the North American indices, the U.S. indices, I should say, we did not see a downward break in the NASDAQ. But my point is that most people remain focused on Wall Street and felt that that was a resumption of the bear market overall. Well, it turned out to be a pretty brief resumption, as you now know, and a lot of stock markets never broke down, although the Wall Street leash effect pulled them back into support, and a fair number actually tested their reaction, their November reaction lows. But then have subsequently bounced strongly from those levels. Now, a point I've emphasized here before is that if we were going to see a really important rally, and I have indicated from the beginning that I thought this had a good chance of being an important rally. But if we were going to see that its hallmark would be persistence. We didn't have to have big volatility. I associate that with a very, very nervous overall environment. At times, such as we saw last October and early November, a market that's dysfunctional to a degree, leading to extraordinary volatility. This is different. This is just persistent day, nearly day after day after day, strength on the upside. Now it's just about 3 weeks old, and it's not over yet, and to end it, we would really require some quite sharp downward dynamics, and we haven't seen that yet. We have a short-term overbought condition, as I've mentioned before, but the markets are continuing to push higher against that background. That's really very, very impressive. Now, inevitably, at this stage of a cycle, when the debate among bulls and bears is so active, and when most of the bulls themselves are extremely cautious, inevitably you can find charts to support almost any hypothesis. But the fuller money hypothesis has been right from the very beginning after that climactic period that we saw last October, that we would see the Asian emerging markets and the resources sector leading on the upside. Now, that was partly a fundamental view, and it was also a technical view because we did see that steadying action fairly early on. And I was also focusing on markets that were not at the epicenter of the global credit crisis overall. So it's not surprising that markets removed from the direct impact of those of the credit solvent insolvency crisis, it's not surprising that they would be firmer overall. Obviously, the economies of in those countries were affected by the severe recessions in North America and in Europe, leading often to recessions in their own countries, or at least much, much slower growth. But they did remain financially healthier, and so it's hardly surprising that they would be leading on the upside. And the lead is impressive. There are more charts. Owen's covered this theme here today in comment, but we see a increasing number of stock markets breaking up out of their trading ranges. That is certainly not consistent with a bear market. And as I've mentioned before in these broadcasts and also written, that lots of stock markets move down to test their October and November lows earlier this month, and a considerable number of them bounced from those levels, in other words, found support near those levels, and have rallied well back up into their trading ranges. So, as I say, the strongest markets only saw a small dip, never got near their year-end lows. A number of other markets fell back down to those levels, but then it pushed steadily higher, reaffirming support. And the weakest group, in which the S&P and the Dow were included, although not the Nasdaq, broke downwards and extended their declines, but they haven't maintained them. So, on balance, this action is consistent with ongoing base formation development. So any reaffirmation of the overall bear market was short-lived. And the evidence of base formation development, as I say, continues, and some markets have even broken up out of those ranging base formation patterns. Now, it remains to be seen if the ones that have broken upwards will hold those gains. And we won't know until we see the next reaction and consolidation, and we'll be able to tell from where they find support. And the hallmark of a new bull market, particularly where you've had a convalescence period of at least a few months, and those are the conditions we have. But it's not at all unusual for those markets to then form a consolidation above the base, and that's something that we refer to as the first step above the base. And then when those indices break up out of that first step, then you have confirmation of a new uptrend. Now, there are always additional confirmations, and I've emphasized before that we won't have irrefutable confirmation of a new bull market until indices are advancing above rising 200-day moving averages. And because the downward acceleration and great overextension relative to the moving averages was so great in that selling climax that culminated in October and November, and because they fell so steeply, say in that overextension, those moving averages are going to be declining for a while yet. It takes time in terms of lateral activity and also strength by the indices to not only break back above those moving averages but also to turn them up. But that process of sideways ranging, reversion to the mean, continues. And what I'll also say is that if we have less evidence that the bear market is continuing, then by definition, we now have evidence that the new bull market is actually underway for the leaders and beginning for some of the lagging stock markets. So I'm saying we don't just see light at the end of the tunnel. We're actually emerging from the tunnel in terms of some stock markets. Now, I want to emphasize here that that doesn't mean that all these stock markets suddenly go into sustainable upward trends. We are likely to see a further convalescence in a number of stock markets, particularly those that fell to new lows in early March. But I am quite confident in saying that the balance of the risks remain on the upside. And this is a very interesting time for stock markets. Basing periods are choppy. There's a lot of uncertainty. But what happens during that choppy ranging action, and it does, by the way, become less choppy as time goes on, because markets become less emotional, volatility declines a little bit, the VIX continues to ease overall. And the overall action, though, presents ongoing buying opportunities, which are best, the purchases are best made on the reactions, as I've said on a number of occasions. Hopefully, you have established some long positions on the dips or at the beginning of this rally, that we're seeing this month. And the next optimum position, or optimum moment to add to long positions, will be when we do see another pullback and consolidation. But you can imagine the pressures that are developing here. First, the bears are being squeezed, so more covering shorts, and that's adding to demand, helping to push stock market indices higher. And that puts pressure on the bulls, who have a lot of cash. And so some of them are coming in and adding to long positions. Very interesting. Okay, just going to take my headset off and take a quick wee drink. Back again, so you know this is a live broadcast, right? So what else is going on here? Long-dated government bonds were mostly a little bit firmer here today, but it's just an uninteresting sector in my view. The technical action suggests that the advances have stalled. It takes lots of jawboning and actual quantitative easing, buying demand for these markets. And buying of the long-dated government bonds by governments to keep these prices firm. My view is that while people are still genuinely concerned about deflation and the ongoing recession, and that's going to last for a few more months at least, while they remain concerned about that, we probably won't see a rout in the long-dated government bonds. If we do see a rout in them, it would be in the U.S. Treasuries or led by the U.S. Treasuries. But again, as I say, we will probably have enough concerns over ongoing recession. There will be plenty of bad economic news to come, but the more important point is that we'll probably not, most of it will not be as bad as people had been led to expect. In other words, we had all that extreme depression talk and extreme deflation talk, and as I've said on many occasions, I wouldn't bet against Bernanke, who's spent his whole career thinking about how to avoid deflation, and he's got a free hand pretty well to do what he can to prevent it. I wouldn't want to be betting against him here. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's absolutely no justification for holding long-dated government bonds unless you're pretty well convinced that we're going to see a global depression and major deflation. I think what we're going to see is a progression of less bad economic news, with many of the global economies bottoming out in the remaining period of 2009. There's some evidence that China is already doing that, and the leadership won't be coming from the US. It will be coming from the Asian emerging markets and the resources markets, once again, just as we see on the charts. But that one by one, in terms of economic news in these countries, it will be less bad, and then you will see bad news increasingly offset by some moderately good news as economies improve overall. And that, I suggest, is what stock markets are beginning to discount, and they're usually a pretty good lead indicator in that respect. Now, we're spoiled for choice in terms of opportunities. For instance, if the evidence continues to mount that the bear market is over, then one is justified in holding equity positions today and adding to those positions on easing, or for those who are fully in cash, I think it could be a little bit bolder. And one of the things to look for is in the markets of your choice, if you're going into shares, is pick up the relative strength leaders. You can do that using the filters in the library, or you can just scroll through the charts in the individual sections. But at the bottom of a bear market and the early stages of the new bull market, and they're one and the same, historically, the stocks that either bottom ahead of their indices or their main indices, or at least show relative strength on the way up, they're the ones that get by far the best percentage gains. But a lot of people look at those and they say, oh my goodness, well, I've missed that. It's already well up off the lows by what might be a very significant percentage that doesn't mean all that much in terms of where the stock actually came from, as the if the prior bear market was quite sharp. But there's a tendency for people to say, oh, I've missed that. I'll buy something that's still right down near its low. Well, those are the companies that are in more trouble, or at least people feel they are, and they may take a very long time to recover. So, I've said this, veteran subscribers will recall me saying this for decades. When you suspect that you're at the bottom of the bear market and the beginning of a new bull market, and that's exactly what I suspect, then you really do want to be buying the stocks that are showing the early relative strength. Okay. What else? I don't want to short the long-dated government bonds because of the quantitative easing, which is likely to include governments buying their own long-dated paper. So I'm giving that market a miss. People are holding corporate bonds, have been interested. A lot of subscribers have been interested in corporate bonds. That's absolutely justified. Corporate bonds bottom out ahead of stock market indices, or corporate bond indices bottom out ahead of stock market indices and lead on the way up. That's always been the case, and you can see additional evidence from that excellent report from Tim Price that I posted yesterday or earlier in the week. So that's an attractive sector. In commodities, I like the copper action here particularly, and there are a lot of cheap looking commodities. I have longs in copper and in nickel. I'm making money in the copper and I'm losing some money in nickel in the moment, and that should tell you on a relative strength basis that the copper is better. I may even add to that to that position. I've already added to it. May do so again. I'm basically looking to be a buyer, but I'll ease my way in. Some commodities, I generally favor the industrial commodities at this stage, but some of the agricultural commodities are really bombed out. I'm thinking about orange juice, incredibly low. Also, lumbers, incredibly low. I haven't done anything on those yet, but I'm thinking about it. I'll probably go on thinking about it for a while and watching the charts. Natural gas is very depressed. I doubt that we're going to see natural gas below $4 for all that long. Again, I haven't done anything about it yet, but I'm certainly keeping an eye on it. I say we're spoiled for choice here, but copper is the one that's in form here right now. And in currencies, I just love this yen short, and that's looking good. And another key point on the tie-in with stock markets, so important to try to connect all the dots as far as these markets are concerned. You may recall me saying that when the or an evidence of a better environment for stock markets would be when the very previously very strong yen and strong dollar began to fade. Now, the yen has very clearly broken down, following a good nudge by the Japanese government. That's why it's leading the US dollar lower, as the US government has not given a verbal nudge to its currency yet, and they may not need to. It may just happen on its own. But what that means, or what that signals to me at any rate, is that the deleveraging of the carry trade is not only over, but that the process is reversing. In other words, people are beginning to put carry trades back on once again. And what's that mean? Well, that they would be borrowing, particularly yen, but also US dollars, if not now, before too very long. I think they'll be doing this. They will be using that to leverage up some of their investments in an environment where there's a lot of liquidity sloshing around, and that can lift a number of stock markets and commodity markets and also corporate bonds over the short to medium term future at least. So that's really quite interesting, and I think also the proverbial Mrs. Watanabe will be divvying up some of her cash savings between possibly into the rallying Japanese stock market, but also going back into Australian and New Zealand dollars. So on my long currencies, I like the Aussie and the Kiwi, and most of all, and I have a bias towards the euro, but the Aussie and the Kiwi I think are preferable. And my short currencies are first the yen and second the dollar. And sorry, I've gone on an awfully long time with this broadcast, but I do find this interesting, and I feel we're spoiled for choice in terms of opportunities, both for trading and also for investing. So roll on Friday, and meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.